All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Just like the ones I used to know. And children listen to hear the snow.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. But let's keep it real. We've got like one episode of G.I. Joe to do before the season's over, but we are stretching it out with holiday content. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
I mean, it's not so much that we're stretching it out. We just planned poorly. Like, we originally intended to finish the season sometime in November, maybe? Possibly even October.
It was right around a certain event that happened in early November that caused all of us to not want to do any comedy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that checks out.
We had group diarrhea.
We all had group diarrhea. As a nation, we had group diarrhea.
It's weird because I don't think we've been doing comedy for at least the last 6 years.
What are you talking about? What else would you call this?
I feel like sometime in year three, we just kind of gave up.
I think we're at least as funny as The Bear.
Which submitted as a comedy, so I guess. They were a half hour, though. We are decidedly not.
We are not a half hour. In fact, often we go well beyond the limits of reason.
But not tonight. Let's get a move on here.
Oh, Gina cutting right to it. All right.
Here's the deal. For the people that are not part of the industry, Gina, it's the end of the year, which means in the next, say, like week and a half, 2 weeks, everything that's going to happen has to happen, which means Gina is as busy as Gina normally is. She's quadruple busy right now. Is that fair to say, Gina?
Yes, I'm always busy, but I'm particularly busy this month.
There it is. And here's the deal. That's a good thing.
Well, we'll see.
Here's the deal. That's potentially a good thing. We are watching, or we did watch. Guys, we already watched it, I hope, Chan.
I'll get to it.
Christmas in Tattertown. I did not know this existed. I am well familiar with Ralph Bakshi, though.
Yeah, same. I'm surprised this wasn't on our radar, to be honest, because it was 1988, which is like right around our sweet spot.
It is.
Animated Christmas special, which again, we look for lists of these every year. And for some reason, never was on in my purview.
I feel like there's a lot of unaired pilots that go under our radar just because, like, you know, they're hard to get.
Well, this was an unsold pilot, but it wasn't unaired. They aired it on Nickelodeon.
They aired this on Nickelodeon. That is wild.
It's in keeping with Nickelodeon of a certain era. I think this was like a little bit before its time because it has that sort of that very gross animation style and those sort of obnoxious voices.
You said that, but like to me, this all reads as like 1940s, even like late 30s, kind of Fleischer era style.
And it very much had that vibe about it. Yes,
not so much, you know, your later Chris Falusi. It's like, hey, let's zoom in on this like exploding pimple kind of thing.
I guess what I meant was like it had a very Rocco's Modern Life vibe to it. It's not attractive animation. They're sort of hideous characters. And Rocco's Modern Life was later than this, although they did in subsequent years air this opposite Rocco's Modern Life. But Rocco's Modern Life was in the 90s, in the early 90s. But this had a 39 episode order, but there was apparently controversy over Bakshi's other show, Mighty Mouse, which I would love to hear what the controversy was.
You don't remember this?
I don't think so.
I don't remember either. I would love to be educated.
This is the thing where...
Wait, are you asking if I did? Do I not remember something from 1988? A controversy from 1988, Chan? No, I do not.
Hey, Gina, why aren't you up on this? Come on.
It's in animation, and it's kind of a big deal. Because, again, I believe it involves John Crisfalusi. Or maybe it didn't. I know John K. worked from at some point. I thought he was involved in this, maybe or maybe not. He was just like an animator at the time. But there's Mighty Mouse. There's just a shot of Mighty Mouse like...
Oh, doing cocaine. Flowers.
Yeah. And then just
I just Googled it.
Oh, see...
Well, so why don't you let Chan tell the story at that point?
No, by all means, Gina, her vast knowledge of this.
I want the full story, though, because that can't possibly be the only reason.
Gina.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a simpler time.
No, in 1988, everyone was doing cocaine in 1988.
Not so much on children's cartoons. Is the thing.
No, we were being taught by Punky Brewster that nose candy is not okay.
Were we?
Nose candy. You know, cocaine.
Did they? I mean, see, I'm not the Punky Brewster connoisseur that you are, so I can't tell if this is a joke or not.
This is not a joke. The same people that brought you Trapped in a Fridge brought you the Treehouse, I believe, Clubhouse, where the kids, with the children... did massive amounts of cocaine and tried to bring Punky on board.
In a treehouse?
I swear to God, I remember it as a treehouse. That part I'm not as sure about, but definitely it stuck with me for life. The entire line about nose candy, because very specifically they refer to it as nose. It's the vibe. It's the texture of the whole line. It's, you know, nose candy. What's nose candy? Nose candy. Yeah. You know, cocaine. And that line read has never left my brain, nor will it ever.
It's it should phenomenal. Absolutely should not.
Phenomenal. I highly recommend we seek out that episode for this show. I think we would get a lot of mileage out of it.
Not. I have no plans to do that.
Look, once we watch that Alice in Wonderland on roller skates live action, the genie came out of the bottle, as far as I'm concerned.
So yeah, there's like a few frames where like Mighty Mouse grabs some flowers and either it like changes into a pile of white powder, or it just sort of seems like these flowers kind of look like, you know, whatever, and he like sniffs it like you would a flower, and then it disappears. So they're like, oh, he's doing cocaine, obviously. We can't have that on Nickelodeon. So they axed the, it's not even the same cartoon, but like, they're like, no, we got to get away from this. And that was that.
That's pretty wild. And for the kids at home, Ralph Bakshi, a very famous animator. I'll just briefly here, the things that he's known for, and most of these I could have got off the top of my head, but like Fritz the Cat is his big, it was an X-rated animated feature from the 70s.
Fritz the Cat.
Cool World. Everyone knows Cool World.
Cool World, but they also, the Lord of the Rings cartoon from way back in the day, he did those as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple others of my favorites, Fire and Ice and American Pop, which I didn't actually know about till recently. Somebody on our Discord actually hit me to American Pop. But also Fire and Ice, which is great. And I said Wizards, the one where in a fantasy world, they get Hitler speeches and the evil wizard goes full Nazi. It is,
doesn't
wild.
It end with the good wizard, like pulling out a pistol, just shooting the bad guy.
I do believe it does end with a gunshot wound. Yes.
Also, I just want to real quickly loop back around. I saw Cool World back when I worked in a movie theater. So stoked to see it building up to it because we had posters for the longest time. Like, oh my God, this looks amazing. This is amazing. And I feel like I watched it and I largely enjoyed it.
I love it.
Interesting. Like, if you ask anybody who remembers, I don't think a lot of people remember, but I think they will all say almost unanimously that it was trash.
No, yeah. I think they would say they loved it.
Really?
I've only heard bad things about it.
No, it's like a weird cult hit. I mean, it is. It's, you know, it was like, I think at the time, maybe some people thought it would have a Roger Rabbit vibe, and right. It didn't. But like, I loved it. I love Brad Pitt. I love that he turns into a cartoon at the end just so he can fuck his cartoon girlfriend.
I mean, as an adolescent male, the idea of having sex with a super hot animated girl. Yeah.
Not interested. Like, just not interested. I only have eyes for my wife. Thank you, Robert Clark Chan.
What? Your wife when you were 16?
I knew someday I would be married. And so no eyes for me, Robert Clark Chan.
Okay. Well, you know what? Good answer.
That's my only answer. And I will let you know if it changes.
Unusual coming from you. Usually you make very bad.
I'm a giant horn dog, as we all know. All I talk about is doing it. Am I right? Rubbing butts together.
Doing it. Real quick.
Doing it.
Because this, I feel like, is important.
Now let's really have some fun. Just some grass, a few uppers, and a little nose candy.
Nose candy?
Cocaine.
Sure. Sherry and I do that all the time.
Phenomenal. And here's the deal. I remembered the line read wrong, but it's still, that's how it's in my head, and it'll be there forever.
You know what? That's pretty great.
It's pretty phenomenal. Chad, I'm so happy you found that so quickly. What a delight. Oh my gosh. What an absolute delight. Okay. So anyway, cool as ice. I mean, look, they what if we made Roger Rabbit with Ralph Bakshi's instead? And they got
it
a movie
cool
that's
world, not cool
was,
as ice.
I was gonna say, what
Vanilla
the
ice.
Hell is cool as ice?
Oh, did
is
I say cool as ice?
Yes.
Look,
you did.
I'm always thinking about that Vanilla Ice vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as we all should be, quite frankly. But anyway, I actually didn't see it. I was too young, I think, to be kind of in the market for it when it first came out. Although I loved Roger Rabbit, I was aware of Cool World, or as I call it, Cool as Ice, a different movie, also great. But no, I never went back and I never went back and watched that one. Are y'all saying it's worth it?
I haven't watched it recently, but I watched it maybe a decade ago, and I remember still enjoying it.
Okay.
I feel like there's going to be some stuff that doesn't age well. There's probably going to be at least, I'm going to say, two racial epithets and 17 instances of wildly misogynistic.
I don't know. If Gina from 10 years ago doesn't remember a lot of problems with it, maybe it wasn't so bad. Now, much of Ralph Bakshi's work is problematic.
Yes.
Be real.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but some of us just aren't pussies about it.
Wow.
Oh, is that how it is?
Wow. Pick me. anyway,
like other girls.
I'll be honest, I couldn't really make heads or tails of this. It is all over the place. There is a through line that does run through it, but they take a lot of asides to just do stuff that doesn't really add anything except flavor text. And it's like a whole special about flavor text. I can see why it didn't get picked up. I don't know what legs this
It
would
did
have.
Get picked up. It had nothing to do with the content that it didn't get picked up. It they ordered 39 episodes about it. You're using that term wrong. It got
okay,
picked up.
Me.
It's just that controversy caused them to say no. But they liked it enough. I mean, honestly, for 1988, I think this is pretty good. Also, fucking Keith David is the saxophone. How can you?
As soon as I heard his voice, immediately, I think I hit our chat. And I was like, oh, shit, is that Keith David?
What?
And then I looked it up. Yup. He's magical. He is magical. I love him.
This has all the Bakshi Nickelodeon styles, including a ton of Easter eggs throughout, like in the background. Like he always draws shit in the background that, you know, that you're hoping that the kids don't pause on to look at, basically.
Okay, I missed apparently a lot of it because I don't remember anything but I wasn't looking at the background. Of course I wasn't. I have the brain of a child.
But this is, I mean, basically the premise is that a girl and her two stuffed animals get sucked into like an animated world. I mean, it's very cool worldy from that description. But definitely, as soon as they do, her toys become sentient, like Toy Story. And then the real life girl is an asshole about it.
She's terrible.
She's clearly the villain in this story.
This is my first problem with this, is that,
yes,
first off, I think it suffers because I was expecting a Christmas special, and this is a pilot, and it feels like they're trying to do both of those at the same time, and it just got real mushed up, because like they're trying to do too many things. Mm-hmm. Like this, like, yeah, there's a bad guy, and then a few minutes later, the presumable protagonist thing becomes the bad guy, but the first bad guy doesn't get redeemed in any way, keeps acting exactly the same way. You're like, who am I rooting for here?
Yeah, this, I mean, even the first sentence of the synopsis on the Wikipedia page is: a high-strung, self-absorbed young girl named Debbie opens a magic book, sucking her, a stuffed dog, and her doll Miss Muffet into the realm of Tattertown, a Fleischer-esque world where discarded items come to life. So if you're describing but again, this is very, you know, like if you watched Ren and Stimpy, neither one of them were good guys. Like this was sort of the, oh, well, no one is an optimistic hero. This was before SpongeBob. But my problem is that the Miss Muffet immediately is like, oh my God, I'm alive. I can think, I'm sentient. Thank God. And the little girl is like, I'm going to take you and go home, which would essentially fucking kill her or put her back into this catatonic state. So of course, Miss Muffet is like, runs away and is like, hell no, I don't want to be hugged and squeezed and touched and smushed by this little girl. And like not be like, I'm sentient now. This would basically be like if, you know, fucking Andy in Toy Story just like wanted to put Woody through the like wood chipper, and Woody was like, no, I don't want that. And then they made Woody the villain for not wanting that.
Yeah. I mean, it's rough though, because like she gets her sentience. She has been a mistreated, you know, prisoner basically her entire life. They established that even before she goes sentient. Like, she doesn't even want to wear these outfits. And and then as soon as she gets sentient, she's like, I'm free. And then there's like a chase scene, right? Like she's running away and the child, who is awful. And I think this child is bad. This child is self-centered, but this is like Elmo syndrome. We as we were watching Elmo with fresh eyes as our small child was growing up, Elmo is ridiculously self-centered. He doesn't refer to pronouns. He just says Elmo wants this, Elmo does that. But it's also the point of view of like a five-year-old. And these are the most self-centered people on the planet. Now, I think this girl's a little older than that, but still.
Yeah, this girl's like 12. She's old enough to have killed her first animal by now.
Oh my God.
I'll say this.
Wait, no, hold on. Gina, how old are you when you killed your first animal?
I don't kill the animals. I kill the people who kill the animals.
Oh, dang.
Oh, who watches the Watchmen?
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not stuck in here with them. They're stuck in here with me.
it makes sense nowadays that the protagonist of the show would be the one that wants to drag her former slave kicking and screaming back to the world where she remains a slave.
Uh-huh.
I think
who can't talk back to her either.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The collective diarrhea we all experienced in November, I think, tells you that there are plenty of people who feel that way and would appreciate a world where that was normal.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know, taking it to the man by letting billionaires run everything. Hold on. Oh, the other exciting voice thing, who shows up like three or four times in small roles, including Santa Claus and a street cop, Arthur Burghart, Mo effin' Destro yeah. up in here, ladies and gentlemen. This is phenomenal. This cast is great.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Bakshi at the time would have had the pull to get some real quality people on board.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. So, yeah, they chase her for a while. She slingshots off a fence. She launches away. Now, this is the part where she stops becoming sympathetic to me because she gets away. She can just go live a life in this town. But what's on her mind? Revenge. Revenge against all the people who already live here, right? Like, they're allies here.
Does she just want to live here? Doesn't she just kind of want to live here? But then the little girl is like, yeah, let's celebrate Christmas. And because Christmas has bad memories for this doll of like being unwrapped and squeezed and poked and prodded, she's like, hell no, we got to kill Christmas.
It seems like she wants to ruin it for everybody, but that's just me.
Missed a complete huge chunk of this thing where she walks in on a spider who has grabbed a doll, I think, and
she's
is going
another creature, another being.
Yeah, another living thing, and is going to eat it, which, you know, I mean, it's a predator.
Spider
whatever.
Do what spider do.
Then she comes in all of a sudden and...
You little rat finch! Can't you see the spider's trying to work?
Who are you?
I mean, she's just doing what you do in prison, which is proving you're the baddest bitch.
But then she says,
why? I'm Muffet the Merciless, and I'm taking over this dump. Now scram!
Okay, I feel like that's pretty clearly a tell-don't-show moment. Like, I'm not entirely clear what her deal is, and she's like, I am a murdering murderer, and I'm going to murder you.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Muffet the Merciless. I mean, Gina, how'd you miss that?
I forgot, but also hurt people, you guys.
Wow. Yikes.
Wow. I'm not touching that. Because she immediately goes with the spider, who's now her best friend, played by Charlie Adler, another freaking all-star of VO. Like, this is, again, great cast.
Not her friend. He is now her lackey. He falls after like Lenny.
Yeah,
like,
he's a goon. He's a goon. Hired goon.
Yeah, he is. I don't know. He's his own deal. He has his whole like stealing and wearing her clothes section later. We'll get into that, I imagine, at length.
But, oh, boy.
Yeah. And so, okay, we try to get some sympathetic vibes for our girl hero because there's a little, what is it, like a bear? He has a name. I wrote it down later. I don't remember. But basically, he's missing an arm. And she sews an arm back on. But then, like, she's immediately a dick to him.
Is part of it, does she, like, not sew it back on right or something? Because he looks at it and his, like, thumb is in the wrong direction and she laughs at him or something?
I just remember she's awful. I'm like, okay, here's the save the cat moment. Here's the redeemable, etc. And then she ruins it, basically, at the end.
This starts out as a visual gag. His arm's been ripped off, and she's like, let me see your hand. You know, what are you holding behind your back? Let me see your hands. And then he holds out what is his hand. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh! But then she's immediately, a piece of shit.
And then also she refers to everything around her as junk, to which he says, it's not junk, it's family.
Yes, like, I do remember that.
She's like an American who goes to the other country, and then, you know, they're playing the traditional music, and they're like, play some Conway Twitty. Like, you can't have that. You're there. Enjoy the culture of there, you bubs.
I mean, to be fair, she was kidnapped beyond her control, I guess.
I mean, she ended up somewhere, but it's not like someone grabbed her and took her. It's like Oz, man.
Yeah, that's true. She should go along for the ride.
Right. If I woke up tomorrow and I was in, you know, France, I'd be like, let's make the best out of being in France. You know,
no, you would. We know you. You would go on a rampage like a bull, not understanding what was happening to you, screaming like a half giant, just trampling the French.
You know what? How dare you, Gina? Half giant? I am full giant at worst. Oh, my gracious. Anyway, she goes. Now, this is where it really kicks up. We get some real wizards going on here because she goes straight to the land of war toys, TV sets, and other unsavory characters.
Yeah,
love
the
that
Deadster
bit.
Zone.
Loved it.
What was it
called?
The Hamster Zone?
The Deadster Zone. Like dead and mobster, I guess. I don't. Kind of unclear about that.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
None of this did, which is okay to a certain extent, but I don't know.
It's all good. Here's the deal. It's all good to me. And also a really wild thing about this pilot is instead of having commercials or just some sort of cut that any human being could have edited, they just left in like 3 minutes of black screen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, clearly,
this was off some sort of master tape. So, like,
right? I'm assuming whoever uploaded it to YouTube does not care.
Whoever uploaded it to YouTube is like, you're welcome. Knowing is half the podcast.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I was excited that I got to scrub through a part of this episode, to be honest. Because time,
when I saw
it
was 29 minutes, I got a little nervous.
Yeah, same.
So we are introduced to Christmas because the people of this land do not know what Christmas is. Why would they? They don't have religion. And she's like shitting on them for it. What do you mean you don't know what Christmas is?
I mean, to be fair, this is what missionaries do, right?
Well, also, this is full of things that have been discarded, especially like toys and the like. There should have been a shit ton of things that are either directly Christmas or were given at Christmas, and so they have some sort of understanding of what the holiday is.
Well, they were inanimate until they got to this land, though, unless I'm mistaken.
No. Fucking
no, you're
Muffet
right,
knows
because
exactly
the doll,
what happened.
Yeah, the doll does know. You're right. Okay. I kind of was just like, okay. In my mind, there was like a switch that flipped, and they were like a Christmas tree that shows up but doesn't, you know, in an alternate land where it doesn't know what it's a Christmas tree. It just is what it is, you know, just like human beings. We don't know that we are here to sing. Well, most of us. So they say, let's find the Christmas stuff. We have a quest. We're going to find all of the discarded Christmas items. There have to be some. They find a wreath with a bow on it. That's a shady character trying to sell them cigars. What was that?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, all right. I won't.
I can hear you worrying about it.
I would probably want to hear whatever it is you just tried to play.
Stop.
Okay, let's move forward. They don't know what Christmas is. I keep thinking there's a song about to start here. I keep thinking we're about to hear a song, and then we just don't.
No.
The music swells, the background, the camera starts pulling back to reveal stuff, and it's like, oh, all right, we're going to get a musical number here. Get the asterisk ready so I can point it out for Chan, and then nothing happens. Maybe that was the joke. I don't know. It was kind of great, though. This takes us to Muffet, the evil doll, the nasty evil doll, is sending spies to Tattertown in the form of a fly. Then she also sends Tab the toy gun, who and his friend the old-timey phone. And he says, we're going to go shooting teddy bears up and down this land. Let's go.
Yeah, she sends an unhinged Western guy to murder everyone.
And he's doing like a John Wayne bit, unless I'm mistaken.
Yes, you are not mistaken.
God, reference level stays. And this takes us to us meeting Tannenbaum, who is a 10-foot tall but very sparse Christmas tree. But the joke is he's very New York Jewish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That was a lot of jokes in cartoons back then.
What? He was Jewish?
Chan, just play the clip.
Christmas tree. Hey, what do I know about Christmas? I'm a shopkeeper.
Okay, that is... Let's just go ahead and call out the anti-Semitism.
He didn't say there was anything bad about being him. Does that count?
Saying that the thick Yiddish accented character is a shopkeeper
is a comic book shopkeeper.
A dog whistle, or perhaps just a whistle.
Well, as one of my libertarian coworkers told me, he doesn't believe in dog whistles because he can't hear them.
This is also a very common trope back then.
Yeah. There was like four characters, Chan, and this was one of them.
I look, I'm not in any way defending it.
And he also eventually goes along with the gag, goes along with the game because they say, you'll be our Christmas tree. He goes, I have a life. I don't want to be your Christmas tree. They say, you won't have any competition. Oh, I see now where maybe that is anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
Wait, why? I don't get it. Why is anti-competition? Is that an anti-Semitic thing?
I assume that what they're trying to say, the through line of that, the dog whistle is, this is a chance for you to make a lot of money.
No, you are reading into that, sir.
Am I reading into that?
Absolutely not.
There is never any... I took it to mean like he was like, I don't feel like trying to compete against other people. I think he knew he was a little sparse. And then they were like, listen, you're our number one guy. And he was like, oh, all right. I think this was an ego stroke.
Oh, I did not. I did not get like, those same vibes.
Do you want to be our official tree? Not like, do you want to be in the tree pageant? He's like, do you want to be the tree? And he's like, no. And he's like, I'm gonna rub two shekels together, and it's like, oy vey.
But the thing
is,
the rest of the character is so stereotypically Jewish. So if there was money involved, why? Like, it's not like playing coy is not part of this character. there is no mention of money. No one ever says like, oh, well, you're gonna make a lot of money. That would make more sense if they were. Just trying to out and out say it as an anti-Semitic trope.
Gina, do you...
play the clip.
No. Hooray, hey. Help me see. You've talked me into it. Where do I sign, huh? Let me shake hands with you. I always wanted to be a monopoly.
Do we all know what a monopoly is here, Gina?
Monopoly would be where you own everything, have no competition, and make all the money.
But what's the part before that?
The part before that's what we really got to hear, though, yeah.
Manash, manash, I'm a busy man.
But there's no competition.
No.
That's it.
No competition. I've always wanted to be a monopoly. I don't know. I hear it.
Yeah. This is not great.
Here's the deal. We've seen worse.
I mean, there is worse out there.
You know.
I agree that the character is not good. I just think that part is a reach. I don't know why he thinks he's going to get money to portray a Christmas tree.
I mean, why else would he leave his lucrative comic book dealings? I wonder. Chan, you playing something?
No.
What is happening over there?
Chan's watching porn in the background.
Don't worry about it.
Yes. Chan, I swear to God, if I hear I'm stuck in the couch, I'm coming over there. I'm coming over there.
You're coming over there to get him unstuck from the, you're going to help Chan get unstuck from the couch is what I took away from that. Chan, if I hear anything about someone being stuck in a couch, I'm coming over there. You better not be wiggling your butt suggestively.
Oh, boy. Gina. If you were there on Thanksgiving, I think...
Oh, my gosh. Are we talking about that?
No, 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 no. We can discuss it off air.
Someone okay. got stuck in the couch on Thanksgiving.
We'll just say a lot of folks that y'all listen to the show know, and their families came over for Thanksgiving dinner at my house.
And that's all. Raymond expressed some surprising proclivities that everybody leapt upon, and much fun was had.
We're just going to say everybody had a great dinner. The Lions won. Everybody was happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to say anything more.
I guess not.
I mean, we can't. Do you want to, Chad? I mean, I'm here for it.
I mean, if we're not saying anything more, that means this episode is done, right?
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in 3 requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. But it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.
This is the Masters of the Universe Mighty Cycle from Tonka. Adult assembly required. It's got bold galactic designs and super sleek styling. Masters of the Universe Mighty Cycle with big wide track wheels that let you master turns. Master spins. Master the action. Masters of the Universe Mighty Cycle. New from Tonka.
Back to G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Oh, no, we have more darkness coming up. Second ad break. But before that, the girl's trying to teach these refuse caroling, decorating trees. The bad guys are like a gun and an old timey phone. And they're like tied together. I didn't quite.
I did not understand that.
I also didn't understand this.
I didn't remember a moment where they got tied together. They were just tied together at one point. No. And then like they trip and fall as they see them doing the stuff for Christmas. They spin into a wheel, fly up into the air, suddenly are a light. They have been lit up despite the fact that, to my understanding, a gun and an old timey phone have no bulbs or light sources on them whatsoever.
Yeah. I also don't know why they light up.
And then they just fly in the air and stick to the tree.
Okay, hold on.
The wreath, who's on the tree.
The thing is, like, a telephone has electricity going through it. If memory serves, like those old-timey phones, you actually had to crank them to get them going. I don't understand why they're connected, but somehow they got connected through a wire. And as the phone got going, it started generating more and more charge. And the gun was like, "Hey, just you know that you like explode or whatever if you get too excited," which is what happens. He gets too excited as he's chasing it and zaps them both. They go flying and light up like Christmas tree ornaments.
I mean, yes. The thing is, by the time 1988 rolls around, rotary phones had been gone for over 2 decades. They were around, but they were being phased out starting in the early 60s for push button phones, right?
This is the phone that predated rotary phones. Yes.
So this is an old reference. Even for the time it came out last millennia.
Well, yeah, but also this is referencing cartoons from the 30s and 40s.
It is.
So, it's you fair. Know, like that holds.
It's just, it's an odd moment, an odd bit. It's like they had to work backwards from where they wanted it to get, but no aspect of it made sense any step along the way. So they just went, F it. That's what happened.
I mean, the whole vibe of this thing is like, hey, let's just have a bunch of, you know, non sequitur gags and it'll just be overwhelming and therefore funny in the way that an airplane was, whatever. So like it makes sense why they're doing it. I just don't feel like it holds up today. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't run across someone who's, say, 20 years old or whatever, and asked them to watch Airplane. I still think it's hilarious, but I bet you a 20-year-old today would be like, what is this? This sucks.
No, I bet you Airplane holds up. Now, here's the deal. When I found out that the young millennials, Gen Zers, don't think Spaceballs is funny, that one really hurt. Because I watched that recently, and it was delightful. Airplane, I have to imagine Airplane holds up. Now, it is, look, compared to movies of today and the TikToks of the world, it's going to be slow to them. But at a certain point, like, the gags still come really fast in the Abrams Zucker Abrams movies. I have to believe that there's enough there that they'll appreciate it, at least, if not super enjoy it. I want to believe, Chan.
I mean, we just got to... Gina, you know a bunch of, like children. By children, I mean, you know, 20 to 25.
Yeah, get the guys in your basement and show them Airplane, Gina.
Yeah, see what they say. Get back to us.
I don't let them watch movies. I prefer them to have no knowledge of the outside world.
All right, That's fair.
And then she likes to go down there and goes, you all don't know what Christmas is?
This is very Debbie vibes Gina's giving off here.
It's a crazy, crazy moment. So we go back to our second commercial break, full of darkness. We come back with the Fly coming back to deliver another note, another spy note to Muffet. Before we really get to that, though, we have a scene with the spider who's kind of taking a back seat, but he's in Muffet's dressing room, bedroom, chamber area.
You skipped over the part where, like, tobacco pie, that gag.
Oh, I did. I didn't even pick up on that.
What, you didn't see the fucking huge slice of pie with cigarette and cigar butts sticking out of it?
You know what? I must have been typing. I looked down. Yeah. I must have missed that bit.
I was confused about this because first of all, how does a doll who just became sentient know what her favorite foods are? I mean, even in Doctor Who, he's got to test out his new taste buds.
Again, they took a bunch of gags and just threw them at the fucking wall. I'm not disparaging or saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying that is what it is. And they wanted to do a joke about tobacco pie, which, to be fair,
it's fine.
Like, if you say tobacco pie, that sounds disgusting. I'm guessing in real life, it is also disgusting.
It elicits emotion. That's for sure.
You know,
I'm here for it.
Some people are into that sort of thing, so more power to them.
Well, it took me a sec to realize the spider wasn't in his own room because he's just hanging out having a monologue. And then he starts putting articles of clothing on, and it's like I suddenly understand, like, oh, these don't belong to you. Oh, these belong to Muffet somehow, who just got here. And then Muffet comes, and it's real weird and creepy. I mean, it's Ralph Bakshi. It's real weird and creepy, even for him. And she comes into the room furious, and then she tries to drown him in a bathtub full of pee?
Well,
what else are you going to drown someone in, Ray?
Why is there a bathtub full of pee readily available?
In case you need to drown someone in it. Do I need to spell it out for you, man?
Yeah, I need to take your Udemy course, Gina, on villainy, because this one, at first it starts splashing and I'm like, that is pee. That is yellow colored pee. And then they cut over to an entire bathtub of it and she's dunking him in it. And I'm like, this is horrifying.
Yeah.
I don't want to be drowned in a bathtub full of pee. I'm going to go ahead and say it right now.
It is, he is putting on, also, while we're on the subject of bathtub full of pee.
Let's stay there.
Skipped over the fact that there was a stove that ate her tobacco pie that she was very much looking forward to.
Oh, that's what was happening there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little confused by it, and I just moved on because it had no effect on me.
You didn't see the part where he immediately did a screaming explosive diarrhea shot right afterwards.
No, I caught that. I didn't see what he ate, so I must have been typing something and looking down, because also, I saw the stove, I saw the diarrhea, I saw her get mad at the stove, and the stove's like, what do you want me to do? I'm a stove who eats shit.
Jan, the diarrhea part was like, it was not surprising to Ray, because that is what happens to him after he eats any food, is he instantly gets explosive diarrhea. So it wasn't odd to him.
No, this was the most normal part of the cartoon as far as and there was a moment in my head I went, you want to rewind and just kind of see what that was about? And I was like, nah. We've hit two commercial breaks. I'm ready. I'm ready to keep going. I got a bathtub full of pee in front of me. So he's wearing Muffet stuff. It's crazy. So, okay.
And it plays like he wants to be king himself. And so he's putting on the royal vestments and whatnot. But given this is 1989, given that this is Ralph Bakshi, like, pretty sure that this is a cross-dressing joke.
That's what I got out of it.
It's a little muddled because, like, it's a robe and a crown that very much looks, you know, gender neutral, or what a king wears, and she, you know, it doesn't look especially queeny, I guess, but like, yeah.
Huh, that's, yeah. I would have assumed, again, to sell this joke, he needed to like put on lipstick or something, because this looks very much like a man king.
But why? He hasn't been like, oh man, I really wish I was king. He's just like,
that's the whole point. Ooh. Doesn't he wants to take over the town.
Well, sort of. He's never said it before. And I don't think anywhere in here he says that explicitly.
I don't know. Play the clip. I thought he was like, oh my God, I look so great as king. I want to be king.
It's a very long bit.
We'll play some of it. Play a little bit of it.
Oh, a bevain doily, fit for a monarch. Much royal garment.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Ah, pipe down. No doubt about it. Yes, sir. Clothes make the man.
Yeah, okay. He wants to be king. I guess
I'm not saying that cross-dressing angle wasn't also there.
Yeah. He has the same voice as the neighbors on Rocco's Modern Life. And they're also very much like, oh, we want to do this thing. They were also very power hungry.
Hold on.
He's always dressing up in your clothes when you're not home.
Oh, that's the one okay. Like. Yeah, that's different. Wait, he's talking to the doll?
The fly is snarking on him to Muffet.
The dresser.
Oh, the dresser, excuse me.
Oh,
telling.
I was going to say, she's only been there for like 20 minutes. How's he always?
But it's all he's done the entire time. Yeah, this is something.
It's a very, very confusing.
Yeah, then we go. Also, like what I'm saying, like it's this is a pilot and a Christmas special. And they're trying to, you know, like introduce all of these characters at the same time. They're telling a story. And so a lot of it just gets muddled.
Muddled is the word I would use for this entire special. Just things on top of things on top of things. You don't really have time to like think about what you just saw. And they've moved on three more bits, you know? So giving myself excuses for why I missed that one bit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is where we go full Grinch. The Grinch stealing Christmas, because Sid's now going to become a reindeer, dressed up as a reindeer, and Muffet's going to dress up as Santa, and they're going to fly around, and they shoot off a cliff. And there's a bit I howled, I enjoyed so much, where that fly messenger is gripping the top of them and is doing all of the flying for them, despite being so much smaller than they are. And I loved it. I loved that moment. I loved that bit. I'm gonna give him credit.
Yeah, yeah. At first I was was like, how dare you like bite off of Grinch is Still Christmas? But then again, this is something that is intentionally throwing back you know, to animation history. Yes. And they don't make any bones about where it came from. Like the picture, yeah. or the reindeer has like the single horn.
The same, tied on the same way.
Also, yeah. like yeah, a yeah. grumpy dude or a grumpy person who doesn't like Christmas and is won over by the Christmas spirit. Not original in any, I mean, Scrooge was, yeah. you know, around a long time as well. So it's not specific to any one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, immediately this takes us to, I wasn't ready for all the weird directions we were going to go, because it's time for Christmas and it's Christmas time. So we're going to like exchange presents. We're going to do all the Christmas stuff, but the toys still don't, Misfit Toys Island still doesn't really understand. So like a lumberjack toy wants to chop the tree down. And the little girl's like, no, that you all just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Yeah. It's a weird shift, because she's been presented to us as exactly the sort of person to be like, I want toys and that's it. I don't give a shit about Christmas. Right. And then she's trying to explain it, talking down to them, so that is very much in character, about the spirit of something.
Yeah, and then real Santa shows up, also played by Destro. Again, I was not ready for real Santa to just, hey guys, I'm here now. And then the bad guys, the evil toys, now they've got like a squadron of flying toys with Muffet and the flying reindeer. They're coming in. And everything gets botched. Muffet isn't much of a leader, not much of a tactical genius. And so, like, one of the toys blows up and runs into another toy. And so all the other toys are like, oh, she hasn't really told us what to do. So clearly by her actions, Muffet wants us to attack each other.
Yeah, I was also confused. I don't know. Also, like, Santa's kind of like into it. Like, he was like, hell yeah, all this death is fun. Like, I wasn't sure what was going on here, to be honest. I think he's like, oh, I haven't had this much fun since something. And I was like, is Santa stupid? Or like, is he? Because I guess when they crash into each other, they do make fireworks. So it does seem fun.
Yes, this whole section, it's like, it's almost like he said, you know what? We haven't had enough violence in this episode. Let's crack some skulls here.
No, you clods! Run into each other!
Yee-haw! I haven't had this much fun since Me Golly!
Since Me Golly?
Me.
Don't worry about that. The less I think about it, the happier I'm going to be. True about most things in life, honestly. I hate having to think.
Clearly.
No, we get that.
It makes me really mad, you guys. Yeah, guys, stop it. Stop it. I know I'm so smart and I'm well articulated and my thoughts are well crafted. But it turns out, you guys stop. No, it's I actually like thinking. No likey.
No me gusta.
Guys, don't talk me off this ledge. Oh, y'all, you're the best. So they they try to attack Santa or something. I don't know. Who knows? It ends with there we go. It ends with Santa's there and Muffet's gonna dive bomb everybody and I don't kamikaze them or something. But this is where the kid plays White Christmas by Bing Crosby?
Yep.
We just watched actually that movie, White Christmas, like over the weekend.
Mm-hmm, that's already a good one.
It's so good. Yeah. We watch it every year, holiday tradition. We watch White Christmas and we watch Hobbs and Shaw, Fast and Furious Presents.
Yeah.
And what more do you need? That's all we got.
Nothing. Hobbs and Shaw is a Christmas movie.
Hobbs and Shaw is a Christmas movie. Yeah, mm-hmm. True. You know why? Because I watch it at Christmas.
There you go.
It's a family tradition. Sometimes I'm the only one who watches it, but am I not in my own family?
You are a tradition of one.
Thank you. We play White Christmas. As the dive bomb is happening, things are chaotic. And everyone, including the Polly Pockets doll, are full of feelings. Somehow 3 seconds of White Christmas and everyone's bawling and burst into tears.
To be fair, if you've never heard the song White Christmas before, you and you lived in a weird junk heap town, maybe you would too.
Or if you're like a racist, you'd be like, a white Christmas?
It's all I've ever wanted.
Oh my God. Santa brought me what I wanted after all. What? Oh no. And weirdly enough, Muffet like crash lands and ends up in jail.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand this bit because she's in jail, but it's not jail.
And also they're giving her presents in the jail, right?
Right, because it's Christmas.
And then the little girl comes over and goes, you're in jail. I own you now.
Yeah, it's a very strange, strange ending.
Because that's it. It is abrupt.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like, honestly, like if left to his own devices, he would have gone another like 48 minutes. But they were just like, at that point, you got to stop. He's like, awesome. She's in jail. She is owned property again. How does that, that's my question. How does this, what we saw, turn into a 39 episode series? What do you do with this?
This would have been the first original Nickelodeon animated show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really?
And okay. Given that, you know, they went like with a big name, someone who had established credentials, and
could very easily see this being an animated series. Again, it's like it reminds me of something like the Oblongs. You know, like the Oblongs who lived in like that weird sort of toxic waste runoff land and were all sort of misshapen and because they had different like toxic waste poisoning and things like that. It's just odd people in an odd place.
I love that show. I absolutely love that show. I think Will Ferrell and like Jane Lynch are the two stars, maybe.
Yeah. To me, this like 1988 Bakshi thing feels a little bit ahead of its time and a little bit rushed because
it definitely does.
Because I think like, you know, the Oblongs was 2001. The like, you know, Rocko's Modern Life was like mid 90s. I think if they had waited maybe even like 2 or 3 more years, and if this had been, you know, a mid-season episode instead of the pilot, I could totally see this as a series. I could totally see, hey, here are all, like, the dude at the beginning, the saxophone is basically like, this is where everything you've ever lost goes. Everything. Which is a great concept. I could pitch the hell out of that show.
I like the concept.
Like, every toy you've ever lost ends up here. So literally anything could be in this world, and you could have endless new characters. But if you focus on these, like, weird misfits, and this, I mean, my least favorite character is the girl.
Sure.
But basically what you just keep having her do is just say like, oh, you know, in the real world, it's like this. And it's sort of a fish out of water trying to get everyone to come into her water type story. I could totally see 39 episodes of this back then. But like,
it's so chaotic and there's just so much going on. My brain warps at the idea of just like keeping that up for 39 episodes.
I honestly feel like this would have, if it had gone, if the episodes had been made, it would have tanked. I think it was just a few years too early. Yeah. You kind of have, because what would have happened is like, they still would have been pitching it to children. And I think children got sort of brought into this style with Ren and Stimpy. And Ren and Stimpy had real sharp, simple jokes that were easier to understand. This would have played a few years after. It would have played once like the college kids started realizing there was some wild stuff happening in cartoons. And, you know, like as a precursor to Adult Swim, it would have been something.
Yeah,
but
agreed.
I think it was just like 2 years too early.
Ren and Stimpy came out in 91. So just a couple years later.
Yeah. And Rocko's Modern Life started in 93. So, yeah, I think if this had been around 93, I mean, there's a reason they paired this when they aired it year after year. There's a reason they paired it with Rocco.
Yeah,
sure. Like, again, similar vibes. But yeah, I think this was slightly too early. He should have pitched it 4 years later.
I mean, he was persona non grata because of the Mighty Mouse thing.
He still worked after that.
He did, but like, I don't think he worked at Nickelodeon because Nickelodeon. No, he made
Cool World after that.
Yeah, that's definitely something that, like,
I mean, that's what he did next. So.
You can't work in children's animation anymore. What else you got?
Yeah.
What a talent, though. I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm a fan. Prince the Cat is one of those movies I saw in like high school that I was just, it really opened my mind. It really opened my eyes as to like what was possible, because Fritz the Cat, if you haven't seen it, and this is based on old memories, but it's kind of crudely animated, right? But it just feels like they put a microphone where normal adults were just having kind of raunchy adults, but normal conversations, and they talked like real people talk, and then they just animated them as like anthropomorphic animals. So in there, like Fritz the Cat, like, I don't know if he picks up a prostitute or takes a girl home. I didn't understand the nuance of things back when I was like 15, but like he like has sex with this woman. Like, that's why it got the X rating. People were like, a cartoon where they get naked and have sex? Not for my children.
Wow, to be fair, Ralph Bakshi's still alive. He's 86 years old.
Yeah.
He was born in Mandatory Palestine. 86 is a good lifespan for a dude who's
you got connections. Let's get him on the show.
I mean, I don't know what kind of shape he's in if he's 86. He's not like a Hollywood actor, 86.
He can still talk.
He's not like a Steve Martin Short kind of 86.
Yeah, but they're just turning 80. You crossed that threshold.
That is insane to me.
I can't look. It's really upsetting to me as well.
I don't think you realize how old 80 is and how much older 86 is. Like, people hit an age and every year they lived seems like it's like 100 years.
Like, Gina, it's seeming a lot closer than it used to.
Yeah, I mean, you guys look like you're 86 now. Imagine what you will look like when you're 86. You'll be salt pillars.
I read a thing that said physical appearance, and that you have two ages where you like hit a wall basically, and then you start like looking old, and that was 44 and 60. And that those are you're basically like three windows of life as far as your visuals go.
I think if you take care of yourself, you can look young forever.
Do you know how many more years we got here?
We'll see. We'll see what I look like when I'm 50 compared to you guys.
Well, okay, hold on. That certain other life decisions.
Wildly unfair.
Yeah, changed a lot of what happened to us physically.
I am the before in every picture. You put me with anything.
Oh my God.
You put me with like the corpse of Princess Di. Still kind of a looker compared to me.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I put Chan as the before, decomposing Princess Di as the after, and I go, really got himself together there.
Not that bad.
Anyway, that is Ralph Bakshi's, what do they call it? At Christmas in Tattertown.
You already forgot.
I had to look it up again. Look, it's been a day. That
threshold. There's some thresholds in Ray's case for brains, and it's 40, 41. 42.
Guys, the CTE set in well before that.
44 and a half, 45.
Look, you guys, come on. I gave up watching the fourth quarter of Packers Lions for this. So you know I'm committed to the show.
I desperately want to make a sports ball joke, but I know it's played out, so I'll just leave it for lesser comics.
Okay, so I'm right here. Perfect handoff, Chan.
Of a white Christmas.
Oh, let me out of here!
Heart I ride.
Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming. And we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss and I'm playing my Pokemon and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me.
Oh my god!
Like, traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.